Because we long for a perfect world, we also become impatient for Jesus to return to our earth. Dede Edgar puts this hope in a biblical perspective. Your narrator is Josh Kittleson. Are we there yet? Few questions rank higher in their ability to raise parental blood pressure. Modern transportation gives us the ability to travel in air-conditioned comfort, serenaded by your choice of music, when we visit Grandma's house for Thanksgiving and Christmas, even if she lives 1,000 miles away. However, unless we go on foot, travel means sitting more or less motionless for hours. Our bodies were designed for action, so none of us really enjoys this enforced sitting for hours. And the younger we are, the more we need to wiggle and stretch. Couple this with a child's limited concept of time, and we get the dreaded chorus of, "Are we there yet?" beginning only minutes after we set out on our trip, repeated for as long as the trip takes, making everyone miserable. Perhaps it's just me, but I hear an echo of this every time someone wonders why Jesus has not yet returned. Is he here yet? When it comes to our holiday automobile excursions, we have a pretty good idea how long a trip will take, most of the time. But the journey this world is on, from the first century AD to the second coming, is a long one. And it's a one-time event. We've never made this trip before. Fortunately, the disciples asked Jesus how long it would be. Unfortunately, they unknowingly confused the end of the world with another event. Matthew 24 tells us that Jesus had left the temple when the disciples called his attention to this complex of magnificent architecture. Jesus said to them, "Do you see all these things? I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." Shocked by this revelation, they came to Jesus privately, seeking clarification. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age?" Do you see the mistake? They assumed that this, the destruction of the temple, could only take place in the context of a universal catastrophe. From their point of view, it made a lot of sense. Herod the Great had begun a renovation of the temple some 30 years earlier, and the work would not be finished for another 30. They could not imagine that this magnificent complex of buildings would be destroyed less than 5 years after the completion. Truly, the destruction of the temple would be the end of the world as they saw it. Jesus began his answer with a cautionary note. "Watch out that no one deceives you." Next, he described several types of alarming events. Wars and rumors of wars, nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. Despite the dire sound of these predictions, he said, "See to it that you are not alarmed. Events such as these have gone on," he says, "and will continue." And he closed with this warning. "No one knows about the day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, and they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away." Jesus meant that life would go on as it had been for generations. There would be wars and natural disasters, and in the spiritual realm, general apostasy. But most people would simply carry on their everyday lives, oblivious to what was happening. Unless the disciples think that they would be wise enough to anticipate everything, he gave a final warning. "The Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." But Jesus faced a dilemma. He recognized the mistake the disciples had made. They did not know that their temple would be destroyed in 3 short decades, while Christ's return would be many centuries later. He could have told them, but it would have been nearly impossible for them to keep their courage in the face of such a long wait. In a similar situation, Daniel became ill for 3 weeks, and Jesus knew the disciples were about to face an even deeper challenge to their faith. The crucifixion was less than 3 days away. The psychological effect of 2 such shocks in rapid succession would be devastating. Few could cope with such stress. Jesus faced a difficult problem. He needed to warn the disciples about overwhelming them. He needed to warn the disciples without overwhelming them. So he told them everything they needed to know, in parables. Jesus followed the prophecies of chapter 24 with 4 parables. The faithful and the unfaithful servants, the wise and foolish virgins, the talents, and the sheep and the goats. 4 very different scenarios, but with a unified message. In the parable of the faithful and unfaithful servants, the faithful servant simply went about his business, giving his fellow servants their food at the proper time. It was the unfaithful servant who said, "My master is staying away a long time." Or as the Greek says it, "My master lingers." Apparently, disappointed by what he perceived as a delay, the unfaithful servant began to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The young women waiting for the bridegroom's approach had a different problem. All 10 of them took oil lamps so that they could join the bridal procession, but only 5 of them brought extra oil along with them. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. When the bridegroom finally did arrive, the 5 who did not bring extra oil were left out. In the parable of the talents, a man went on a journey to a far country, leaving his servants in charge of his wealth. In Jesus' day, a talent of gold was equal to 15 years' wages. To one servant, he left a management of 5 talents, 75 years' wages. To another, 2 talents, and to the last, 1 talent. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants had returned to settle accounts with them. He found that 2 of the servants had, through wise investment and personal industry, doubled the amount he had left with them. The master praised them and gave them more responsibility. The one servant, fearing the loss, did nothing and returned the original amount. The master reprimanded this servant severely and banished him. The final parable depicts 2 classes of individuals who will be living on earth when Jesus returns. Those called sheep, who meet the basic needs of those in need, food for the hungry, water for the thirsty, clothing for the naked, shelter for the stranger, human contact for the prisoner. He rewards them with eternal life. On the other hand, those designated in the parable by goats neglected to help others, and they were unaware of their neglect. In these 4 parables, Jesus prepared the disciples and all believers till the end of time with the basic knowledge they would need to remain faithful. The first 3 parables prepare us for what from our vantage point appears to be an extended wait. The master lingered, the bridegroom delayed, and the traveler in the 3rd settled accounts with his servants after a long time. How long would that be? They were not told. Nevertheless, it appears long to those who are waiting. And all 4 parables make clear how faithful servants fill time when they wait, by going about the business of living a grace-filled life, doing their duty by feeding their fellow servants, staying attuned to God's Spirit, employing the gifts God gave them for good productivity, and helping those in need. It strikes me that we who await the Lord's return are often much like the restless children on a long trip. We focus on the length of the journey, seeking out only the signposts that inform us exactly how many miles to our destination, even though that's the one thing we cannot know. But this obsession with, are we there yet, only makes the journey seem longer and causes us needless unhappiness. Jesus wants more for us than that. He said, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." And we can experience that full life while we wait for Jesus' return by doing what he described in the parables, doing our duty, staying attuned to the Spirit, productively employing the gifts God has given us, and helping those in need. Not only will we arrive at the destination at exactly the time as we would have otherwise, we will have found joy in the journey, and we will have lived life to the full.